Okay, so...
Catherine, can I just say something for a few seconds?
Sure.
Hey, see, I was never clear. I probably should have brought it up, what exactly that means. I mean, unless we were sending in a friend of the court brief, I mean... But that's it. I mean, it just sounds...
You're questioning its effectiveness?
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Okay, I don't have the answer to that question, but I understand it. Okay, next on the agenda, let's see, what do we have? I believe we're at the point of having a report from the executive director. Because all the other motions were postponed. Maxie, would you like to do a report for us?
Sure. For those who weren't on the call at the beginning, I was before we got on this call, there was a sort of a casual conversation about a webinar that I conducted today with our program directors. And so I want to provide a little context before I talk about what exactly took place in that call. One of the things I'm trying to do is significantly upgrade the knowledge that our professionals have. It's why we joined Greater Public, so that those who are involved with revenue generation can have resources to their disposal, individual consultants, webinars, conferences, the like, to improve what they bring to the individual stations and to the network as a whole. I'm looking at PRPD, as I mentioned before, the Public Radio Program Directors, for their expertise with respect to programming. But in lieu of that, and because of my desire to get beyond the elections and the financial matters and accounting practices and some of the other aspects of the operation, I wanted to deal with what goes on our air. And after doing the tour, it became quite clear to me, the tour of the station, that it became quite clear to me that while our program directors are well-intentioned, many of them do not have the training to really perform their task in the way that you would want, particularly considering the markets that we serve. Additionally, they don't have access to resources in the form of the audience data and other variables that would make their job and what their decisions are much more reliable in terms of how they communicate them and what their decisions are based upon. So the purpose of this initial webinar, and what I wanted to do is also for added context, when I first came here to Pacifica, there were two meetings that were firmly established for staff. The first one was called a leadership committee meeting, and that was for general managers and program directors to discuss various issues relevant to their stations. And then the second one was more of about finance and accounting, and so that was the business managers. What I wanted to do is create more meetings deal specifically with areas of radio station operation that I outlined in my presentation. So governance, compliance, content, development, and community engagement in particular. And so this being the first of the programming webinars, I had isolated five areas that I thought were important for me to go into detail with the program directors. And so defining the target market was the first, community engagement, clock, volunteer contracts, and something called OES, Optimal Effective Scheduling, and imaging was the thing. Fascinating to me, and a lesson for me, that the curiosity, the questions were so abundant by this group of programmers that we were really only able to deal with the first issue, and that's defining the target market. So what I explored with them was this notion that the first thing a program director has to do when looking at programming strategy is to understand the market that they're serving, to do a market analysis, a SWOT, if you will, to understand the weaknesses, the strength of what we program and how we can fine-tune those things to either take advantage of opportunity or to pull back on things that may be overabundant in the market. Clearly, Pacifica has a historical perspective of being a progressive news and information outlet. Some of our stations have music specialization that is a factor as well. And so we talked about how to do an analysis of the market and define how you fit into the construct of the market that you serve. The second aspect of that is reviewing ratings. And, of course, as I mentioned before, not all of our stations get ratings. And even those that get them don't necessarily have folks who know how to analyze those ratings that can be used towards really making sound programming decisions, let alone communicating those things to the local station boards, the programming committees, and the volunteer staff. More importantly, perhaps, turning that programming research and data into effective strategies for fundraising and other revenue generation. So we discussed some of those elements as well. But the real nut of our conversation was about how to define your primary, secondary, and tertiary audience. And earlier, someone mentioned the notion of a program director at the national level. The reason I would argue that that's not a good decision for us, a good way for us to proceed as an organization, is our five markets are really quite distinct. And I think it would be, while doable to have a national program director, I don't think it's a priority. I think we'd be much better served with someone who can, from an editorial standpoint, piece together national programming, as in shows, not necessarily programming philosophy and the like. So getting back to what we discussed, we talked about how to define your primary target market. And for all the stations, that's progressive news and information consumers. Where it gets complex is when we talk about secondary and tertiary audience. And we talked about in certain markets, the Hispanic demographic is an opportunity that is perhaps underserved. In other markets, the African American demographic might be underserved. And then the Pan-Asian community might be an opportunity. And so, to my pleasure, Grace, if I'm speaking out of turn, correct me, but it was mentioned that following my visit to L.A., that Grace is going to be working with the program director out in L.A. to leverage her connections into the Pan-Asian community to explore whether or not serving that community should be a target for KPFA. I think about Adriana Casanev's research when I was in Houston about the opportunity with Hispanic communities. And so these are just a few of the many research pieces that need to be done, and that's part of the community engagement approach, to understand better our markets that we have to serve and what we can do to make sure that we're aligned. The last piece of that is sort of a transition to the second slide, and that's just introducing them to the notion of community engagement. And more importantly, as Grace is demonstrating in L.A., how gathering members of the distinct communities in a room and actually ascertaining their needs, wants, and aspirations can actually very deeply assist in our notion of what programming should look like, should sound like for those communities. And not only making specific programs or segments that are relevant to those communities, but how we can integrate the needs, wants, and aspirations of those communities into our larger body of programming so that we are making sure that we're reaching out to those communities in an authentic way. So that's sort of what the webinar was about. There will be more of those. Like I said, the lesson in all this for me was that they're very curious. They thirst for information. They want to be enriched with knowledge and information. Me doing these webinars is one step, but if we do PPP, they will certainly have a whole lot more information to gather from. And I think we're going to see the same result with greater public with respect to our general managers, our business managers, and for the stations that have them, development and fundraising managers, because there's just this wealth of information they can take in, understand best practices, find out how to best apply them at their stations, and hopefully make our stations much more fundamentally sound in the execution of radio station operations. So I'll shut up and take questions if anyone has them.
Okay, I'm going to put my Eric and Catherine also. Eric?
Yeah, Jim to the staff.
Yeah, Maxie, thanks for joining us as always.
Yep.
You mentioned the PDs, you mentioned that they didn't have the training. I'd just like you to be more specific. Are you saying they don't have the knowledge, they don't have the ability, or that you've checked their qualifications? Could you be more specific?
Yeah, there are certain program directors who operate within our system who their only experience is having done programming on our station. They have never been formally trained on programming philosophy and strategy. They don't know best practices. It's all new to them. And, you know, I want to believe that some of these folks are worthy of being trained up, and they can demonstrate an intuition as well as an ability to process and analyze information to make sound programming decisions. But the truth of the matter is they're not there yet. You can see that evidently in some people's resumes where they just, you know, became a program director because someone gifted it to them, not because they came to the table with certain level of expertise. And that's not good. We have some stations that actually have program directors and general managers who are deeply engaged in radio management and programming. And so those stations have a distinct advantage over others. But that's more far and few between than it is common in the Pacifica stations. And it's one of the things I addressed when I spoke to all the stations, that we have not invested in human resource, the human capital of our operations, in training folks, sending them to conferences, exposing them to webinars and seminars and all kinds of information that can deeply improve their ability to execute on behalf of the roles they serve at our stations. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Jim?
Well, I know that there are countless opportunities to deal with the kind of issues that Maxie has suggested in terms of adding skills and openness to the management team at the station in New York. And I know that I have certainly, you know, made it always generous to bring people along with me. And the problem, of course, is they can't come because they're too involved in doing four or five different tasks. Now, the other question is, how do you define primary, secondary, and tertiary markets? How do you, what is a, quote, progressive market orientation? And how do you deal with the fact that I saw this happen in a debate in New York on Monday for the LSB, any Nielsen ratings are viewed by a certain percentage of our programmers as racist and hence invalid and not to be thought of.
Yeah. So let me try to dissect the questions you asked. There's a lot of background noise, so if you're not talking, it'd be helpful if you mute. I just hear a lot of breathing and things like that, so it's kind of hard to understand some of the questions. But if I hear you, Jim, right, let me unpack some of the things you've asked. First and foremost, about the PPM data, I think in the past it was a very legitimate statement to say that Arbitron, Nielsen, Radio Research Consortium data might be biased against people of color, and because of the way that it was done, the sampling often underrepresented people of color, both Black, Asian, and Hispanic were all oftentimes not represented. In fact, Asians, you could argue, are not even counted to this day as a unique demographic too many times, depending on the markets you're dealing with. But the bottom line is, the reason I'm not really going to give credence to that philosophy or that belief is because there are plenty of stations in these large urban centers that we serve that serve people of color exclusively that are in the top three in the market. And so if
right.
Black people weren't being represented, I don't think you'd have, you know, a top five station in New York City. If Asian or Hispanic people weren't being represented, You wouldn't find Spanish language stations in Houston, Texas, and Los Angeles so highly ranked. And so I just don't buy that argument. I think if those stations can get a strong aggregation of audience measured for their programming, then Pacifica cannot say that, the numbers aren't in our favor. There must be something else to the story as far as I'm concerned. In terms of how do we define primary, secondary, and tertiary, and what specifically is the definition of progressive, I think that's it's an excellent question. I'm not sure that there's a valid answer without doing rigorous, strategic community engagement work, and here's why. Before we even got on this call, there was a whole conversation about the generation of baby boomers who, in large measure, define the core values of public radio, and I would argue community radio as well, and probably are the majority overwhelmingly of our boards here at Pacifica, both local and national. I think a sound argument could be made that we may not have a pulse on who the young progressive demographics represent, who those people are, what their opinions, views, and perspectives are on all kinds of social, political, and cultural issues. When you look at the hosts of our programs, they're often very older, aged people. They don't necessarily represent some of the young blood that is filtering through progressive movements across the country. Now, that's, a generalization. We have some shows that do that. But I would argue that that's an area that we need to be more ahead of than not, and because of the nature of what we claim to be, a beacon for progressive news and information consumers, free speech, et cetera, social justice advocates and the like. I think we need to do a comprehensive, if not just the five markets across the country, on defining what is the next generation of progressives and what matters to them so that we can define national programming and local programming that reflects that. So that's my way to answer your question. But the most important thing I spoke to the programmers about is that who your primary and secondary and tertiary audiences are should not be the result of looking at data. They should actually be, audience data. What they should be is a result of your intentionality. In other words, our local stations should define, based on market opportunity, based on the dynamics of the society that they are in, who that primary target audience is. So, for instance, in Houston, Texas, this is a good example. I'm going to offend some people when I say this. But Adriana Kopanev made a very strong argument that the English-dominant Hispanic demographic in Houston is dramatically underserved. Now, whether they should be primary, secondary, or tertiary is an argument that should be made in Houston. But the bottom line is that they are dramatically underserved in that market, as is the African-American demographic by KPFT. The KPFT signal includes a music format that is completely segregated to people of color. It does not draw them in. I would argue it's a large reason why that station's audience numbers are so pathetic. But with that said, there are, in all of our markets, opportunities to define who we believe is our primary target audience. And I've chosen to suggest to our stations that we have to be broad and say, for our primary, it's just progressives. And you could do anything from analysis of voting to all kinds of secondary market research that indicates sort of the social, political leanings of different communities. Once you do that, you can ascertain who are the individuals and organizations that service or represent influencers in those communities. Once you've done that, you can do the community engagement deep dive around focus groups and conference calls to ascertain what matters to those communities in more detail and get another roster of people who can help you understand on an ongoing basis what makes that community tick. And so this is not a one-time only, okay, we're good for the next 10 years exercise. This is something I think you have to do a deep dive, community engagement and research-wide, just to get your grounding first. And then it has to be an ongoing strategy so that you're always in touch and in tune with you know, what I would argue might be a volatile roster of audience, because progressive issues can change dynamically depending on what's going on in society as a whole. But Jim, I may have left a couple of your questions off, but those are the ones that come to mind.
Okay, Grace.
Thank you, Maxie. This is very encouraging.
You're welcome.
I think it's a good start.
Thank you.
I'm happy about this. I'd like to say that it's true that Ken and I somehow have a lot of people we know who are activists in the Pan-Asian community from different parts of the Pan-Asian community. So I'm in the process of setting up meetings with our program director, Kevin Fleming, who's
yep.
eager to meet them and talk to them. One of them, just out of, I'm going to start with the person, the two people who are the most familiar with Pacifica. One is a dear friend of mine, a longtime human rights activist, Yoshi Amanaka, who served on the KPFK local station board and also on the national board. So he is involved with human rights issues regarding Tibet, and he also helped produce a documentary about Vietnam recently. He's a retired Workman's Compensation Appeals Court judge. I think you probably remember him, Catherine.
So I'm gonna
start with him. And also with Lisa Wong, who's on our LSB currently. She's also a human rights activist. And I would like to mention as well, we have a population of between 13% and 15% of the population of Southern California is of Asian descent. So it's a very large, it's a large minority. And that demographic, mostly English-speaking, that demographic mm-hmm. is, I think, woefully underserved in the United States, which is,
mm-hmm.
So we could maybe make a lot of inroads. The other thing of interest is that in the last local station board election, the two highest vote getters were two people of Asian descent. Paul Song was the top vote getter, and Lisa Wong was the second highest vote getter. So I think our membership understands the value of reaching out to the Pan-Asian population in Southern California.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to work.
Excellent.
I'm working on
yeah.
that now.
That's fantastic. If I may add just a follow-up to that, you know, it was so wonderful when I was out in L.A. to meet with Grace and members of the local station board, and in our casual conversation about community engagement, Grace mentioned this relationship with the Pan-Asian community. And I remember Kevin was in the room, and I said, this is what we're talking about when we talk about leveraging the expertise or the connections of the board for the benefit of the station. Because if, in fact, rigorous strategic community engagement with this Pan-Asian collection that you are in touch with results in some programming or contributors that will benefit from the public service of KPFK, then this is truly a model for what we want to replicate across the country, because, as you said, they're woefully underrepresented across the country, I would argue, in our programming as a whole. And just imagine if the L.A. station contributing to a national program can make sure that that voice is heard on what we produce as national programming, in the way that hopefully the Pan-African community in New York might be served with WBAI, and the Pan-Hispanic could be perhaps given voice in Texas and the like. So I'm just mentioning those as sort of one-offs, but at the end of the day, this is really, really positive stuff and one of the benefits of my tour for me to hear these connections. So thanks, Grace, for that.
Can I make one quick comment, follow-up comment, Catherine?
Yes.
From those connections several years ago, connections of mine resulted in a local station board member for your station, WBAI, and that's Jeremy Taylor, who mm-hmm. has a Help Burma a nonprofit. If you remember him, I'm sure you do.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Catherine, then I'll get back to you, Jim, okay? So
Catherine,
my question...
I'm sorry, Catherine. I'd like to go to the stack, just FYI.
Okay.
I'll wait till you're finished.
Okay.
It'll just take 30 seconds.
Okay. My comment actually, Maxie, was in relation to the PMB, the LSBs. As you were speaking of your dialogue and conversations with the program directors, and though I know it may not be an immediate priority, but as we spoke of earlier, I think that as the those of us who are involved in the PNB and the LSBs also need to be educated in some of the same fashion to understand what it is that we are engaged in, because very often decisions are made and arguments are made based on ideas other than actual information and fact. So I would ask you to consider at some point creating a seminar in which LSB and PMB members who would like to be educated would be able to participate. And the other thing is that with regard to fundraising, I know in the last couple of years, as we have been working so hard in New York City to get back on track, there was an entire group of people who were on the board as well as listeners who tried to come together to create a fundraising committee, but we were floundering because we didn't have knowledge of how to go about it necessarily, and we didn't have support. So I'm wondering if you would be able to help in those areas.
Yeah, it's a great question. First of all, it's definitely been, I was saying to the PDs that one of the roles as the executive director, and this is for any organization, is in many respects and respectfully to manage up. And that means to provide information to the board, whether it be local or national, so that they are more informed about the decisions and their process of contributing to the organization as a whole. And so in developing the membership with greater public, I have asked the president and CEO and the station relations manager to do a presentation for the strategic planning committee as well as the Pacifica National Board as a whole. And so in addition to the work that they'll be doing with our station managers and development and fundraising directors on a monthly basis in consultation specifically for Pacifica, in addition to the webinars and resources that are available at their website and, of course, the conference that's happening in Dallas in July, they will be addressing the committee and the larger board to give you an understanding of how the station can best utilize greater public's resources, and particularly for the strategic planning committee, to give them a much more information-rich understanding of what exactly underwriting is and how Pacifica can entertain the notion of it without violating its credo of being anti-corporate. The mistake I think I heard in many of the early conversations with the strategic planning committee in particular was these faulty definitions of what underwriting was and just this blatant misinformation that was being shared. And so it took a while to get there, but we're at a point now where we're going to be able to bring some people who are expertise in this area to actually help us understand how Pacifica stations can conduct underwriting in a way that doesn't violate our anti-corporate credo. So I think this is useful. It'll be certainly a Q&A session, and if there's room for debate, there'll be that too. But that's my answer to you in terms of how the board will be able to access some of this information. And certainly if we join PRPD, I'll make sure that arrangements made on that front as well, because I agree with you. It's better for us to all be more informed than not.
Okay. Eric, you said you need 30 seconds?
Yeah, I just have deep concerns that we're in imminent danger of insulting people when we start talking about Asian community, African community, and whatnot. We had an incident here in the district. Just take a very short time, Catherine. We built an arch in Chinatown, and we were talking about Asian people, and the mayor said, well, I'm very familiar with... He was speaking about Chinatown. He said he was stationed in Korea, and there was tremendous blowback. Okay, but we were talking about an Asian community. I mean, we have to remember that the Japanese are Asians just like the Chinese are. I think we should be speaking more about cultures more so than continents. People in Venezuela right now have virtually nothing. They want nothing to do with people on the Iberian Peninsula. So we want to be very careful about that. I was on the Spanish Language Committee a couple of years ago, and, you know, again, there was the Dominican Republic, there's Puerto Rico. They have virtually nothing in common other than a language. So we want to be very careful about this rather than lump people together, just like in Africa. People in the Congo are not necessarily bound to the people in Eritrea, although they're on the same continent.
No, you make a very wise
point. Ken to the stack.
Yeah. If I may respond to that statement, though.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Jim.
Yeah.
And then Ken.
When I talk about serving Pan-Asian, Pan-Hispanic, Pan-African communities, it really is market-specific. For instance, if you're in Washington, D.C., by far the largest African contingency is Ethiopian. So if you're going to be looking at a Pan-African experience here in D.C., you could argue that a tertiary audience might be the Ethiopian community itself. It's the largest Ethiopian bloc outside of Ethiopia itself. By no means am I trying to give some generic notion of serving a community. I think you have to look at each market and ask. In fact, I'll break down for you real quickly how we looked at Los Angeles. While Grace has these five Pan-Asian communities that she has relationships with, due diligence may determine that only two of those five are actually communities that are progressive in nature. There may be some two or three of those that may be very conservative communities. If that's the case, then we're only looking at serving two of them, and it may be Japanese and Taiwan, for instance. If that's the case, then you're looking at serving an Asian community that is reflective of those two communities within the Pan-Asian community versus others that may not have a progressive disposition, if you will. So, again, I'm only scratching the surface in terms of how this is done, but it's more of doing the analysis of the market, understanding the specific communities and trying to serve them in that way. So if I was too generic and vanilla and could be considered offensive by lumping, that was not my intent, and nor would that be the practice. So I respect your question, your statement.
Okay. I had said Jim and then Ken, but I don't think Ken spoke. So let's do Ken and then Jim.
Yes, when we talk about conflicts between nations or groups of nations, you're talking about the fundamental core responsibility or activity or focus of Pacifica from the fourth paragraph of our mission statement to encourage, is the third paragraph, no, it's the fourth, to engage in any activity that shall contribute to a lasting understanding between nations and between the individuals of all nations, races, creeds, and colors. Gather and disseminate information on the causes of conflict between any and all of such groups,
mm-hmm.
and so forth. So it's not something we want to avoid and be super sensitive about. It's something we want to address.
Yep. I agree.
That's all.
I agree completely. Yep.
Okay. Jim?
Okay. There's so much to talk about this issue. First of all, I just want to share a vignette from 1992. In New York. Pat Scott, who was the executive director at the time, comes in New York, and this refers to KPFT. And she's referring to how happy she is to take the Vietnamese language show off the air, I think they had a Cambodian show off the air. In other words, she's taking all the different shows that speak to different groups. They were given shows to do in their own language, and she's clearing the way to have strip programming. I remember that vividly because she was very
She nearly punched me in the mouth when I objected to it. Now, the other thing that comes to mind quickly is when Berthold and I agreed to bring in 10 theater groups to use the space at 120 Wall Street to rehearse, and one of the ancillary effects of that was we got 33 computers. So there's all sorts of things to do in this area. Now, when we were faced with the threat of the Empire State Building, I went to 10 community boards in Manhattan and presented and asked them to pass resolutions to support WBAI. I was not accompanied by anybody else, but I've done this kind of work in the past politically. What I saw in those community boards, for those who don't know, are the grassroots level of government in New York City, in the structure of the government. People came up to me and started talking to me about what problems they were facing in their neighborhoods. Because I asked them, tell me what kind of problems you're facing. And if we're going to rebuild the impact of BAI in the greater metropolitan area, that's the kind of hard work that has to happen. Because I was automatically getting people who were there pissed off about something to come and tell me what their grievances were. And the question becomes, here you have grassroots news possible stories that can immediately be fed into the news stream. It can then, it's essentially you're operating in a focus group. You're operating in a local focus group in a neighborhood of 100,000 people, and they can feed into developing programs. Now, on the issue of the Pan-Asian, Pan-African, I have always had my problems with the way certain conceptions of this is done. Africa is quite diverse. I mean, I've been in Africa, and, you know, people don't, they have the same sort of, oh, you're from New York, or you're from Montana. I mean, you know, they refer themselves inside Nigeria or South Africa. They have the same kind of, you know, sort of parochialisms that we have. And I think that the idea of appealing to these, to all sorts of different groups, particularly in the metropolitan area of New York City, is as complicated as it is in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Houston, or Washington, D.C. It has to be done with a lot of intelligent looking at. And finally, the demographic data from the 2016 and 2018 elections, which I've shared with Maxie and others, that shows me pretty clearly, if we're talking about a progressive, if you look at the voting patterns, it's clear that younger people of color, in terms, and women in particular, that's the thing that stands out in the voting data. Young people of color, women in general, white and people of color, those are the most progressive voters in all the different cohorts. And I've looked carefully at the election data. So right there is a national kind of, you know, demographic that jumps right out at you that here are the people to work with to create new programming, that cohort. And, you know, that's just what I wanted to share because and also – the reason why I've been arguing to have all these digital diverse mechanisms in each station is that there's no opportunities. If you bring talent in, what can they do? Where can you? There's only 168 hours a week, and it's, we're in this age where people don't need us. They can do their own thing. That's why we have to be able to allow them to do their own thing with us.
Okay.
Madam Chair, it's 20 minutes of the hour. Just FYI.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, Jim,
Max, you want to respond?
Sure. You make excellent points. I think we're in accord. I mean, to me, the next step is for those who have the research for the local markets to meet with the program directors, the GMs, and really kind of carve out an understanding of the market opportunities, the audience development opportunities. And we need to start developing those connective tissues to those communities. I think the mistake we've commonly made at Pacifica is thinking that every time we develop a relationship that we need to create a singular show for that group or that person or those people that we've come in contact with. I think that's our biggest mistake. I think what we need to start doing is saying, how can we utilize this new contact as a contact, if you will, as a resource for existing stripped programming.
Correct.
the best practices in programming is not patch quilt, it's script. And if we can create Monday through Friday programs, whether it's 6 a.m. or 6 p.m. or anywhere in between, and we can address issues that connect all of these people, regardless of race, gender, and creed, and find some commonality through the research and understanding of who the progressive communities are, that's really the ticket. And what we have to do is to say, okay, we just made all these connections with people from Africa. This is great. I'm not going to necessarily create an African program. What I'm going to do is make sure that their voices are heard on our news programs that happen at 5 o'clock. Make sure that they're contributing as guests, as contributors, as reporters when appropriate to our 2 o'clock show that's covering social political issues that are happening in the five boroughs. I mean, it's that kind of relationship building that is the most important thing for us to do, not this sort of quid pro quo of, you know, relationship equals program.
Right. Well, just as a quick follow-up, please, Catherine. I'm always working with the Institute of African Studies at Columbia University all the time. I've been working with them for 25 years. And there's constant opportunities to feed people in. But what I'm thinking of more importantly is, and this is something I think can bridge the sort of ridiculous fight that we have here in New York or elsewhere, is get teams of LSB members and, you know, with somebody, an intern perhaps, to bring them into the community boards and say, look, what are the issues you guys are facing on the grassroots here in your neighborhood? And one of the things we're blessed with in New York is we have some of the most racially and internationally diverse neighborhoods in the world here.
Yeah.
I mean, Queens is like amazing. Yeah, and I was mentioning before we got on the air, one time some guy from a Bangladeshi TV station I didn't even know existed in Lyon City came and asked me if he could approach doing something with BAI, and the whole thing fell through the rafters. But those kind of things we cannot allow to fall in the cracks anymore. And I think that we really have to, you know, if we go out and get, you know, people in a neighborhood who get all stirred up, you know, we're angry about this, we're angry about that. Well, that's the kind of stuff we can pump into the morning show. We can pump it into some other show and let them express that, you know. Then they say, wow, those guys are cool. They're paying attention to us. And that is in the reign of what we're supposed to do. And I should add the arts thing as the last thing. You know, we are in the most, again, like all the other stations, there's all sorts of levels of art energy. New York is certainly up there. And to me, our inability to really exploit that, you know, and I know that there's lots of initiatives I've taken to do that, and I can certainly do them again. But, you know, just a matter of time, and we're going to hit the bingo. That's how I look on it.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it's a point of clarification. I'm pretty sure, I don't know if that was him speaking.
That was Jim.
It was. I think he's Bengali as opposed to Bangladeshi, and I think we need to be cognizant of that. We don't want to make that blurb on the air.
I know, but it was a Bangladeshi TV station anyway. Go on. Anyway.
Okay. Yeah, so we should try to be sensitive. All right. So our next discussion, Benito, you brought up, you wanted to speak about the meeting schedule. Are you here, Benito? I think we've lost Benito. Benito?
He's definitely okay. Here. He's on mute. Okay. But.
Yeah, if you're on mute, please unmute. Okay, so does anyone else have a comment or suggestion they would like to share? I believe we have completed everything on our agenda, seeing that we postponed everything to the next meeting on these motions. So,
you want to adjourn early, Catherine?
We will if we can. Who is that? Ken? Okay.
Yeah. This is Benito.
Oh, you're here, Benito. Okay. Go ahead.
I would agree with. I don't know what the predetermined schedule was, but I would agree with Benito. We certainly don't have to meet once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks. That's just my opinion. That's all.
Okay. Excellent. Benita?
Who was this, Ken, that just spoke?
That was Ken.
I'm sorry?
That I have a point of clarification.
Just a minute. What is your point of clarification?
I don't know who that was. He said he agreed with Benito. But Benito was addressing the scheduling issue, if I'm not mistaken. It wasn't the frequency. He was discussing the legitimacy of...
No, I think it was frequency that Benito was... I was the one that characterized it as meeting schedule. But I do think that frequency was the issue.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Benito, go ahead.
I actually have 2 points. Number one, at the beginning of the meeting, I raised the question, who decided that to have these three meetings, in this case, three meetings back-to-back? So that was who decided, because as far as I know, my understanding of the bylaws is that the group, the committee, decides on the frequency of meetings, not one or two or whoever individuals, and especially not in between meetings. And it appears to me that that's what's going on here. So that's one question. But the other question is exactly what Ken said. The majority voted months ago to have meetings every other week. Okay, so if that's it, then let's stick to it. But lately, we've been doubling up and doubling up. And I don't know about anybody else, but, you know, as important as Pacifica is, and we're all on this committee, we're all on this call till almost 11 o'clock at night, Eastern, for a reason, and the reason is, we think Pacifica is important. Nevertheless, believe it or not, there are other things that each of us has to do in life. And some of those things might possibly be more important than Pacifica. You know, like, for instance, terminating the presidency of Donald Trump. And I don't know that Pacifica is involved in doing that. So I would suggest that this committee should respect the time availability of the members of the committee. And that's right. If we agree, like Ken said, if we agree to every other week, then let's stick to every other week. That's
Eric
it.
To the stack.
All right, Jim, to the stack.
Okay, was that Eric?
Yes.
And then Jim? Okay, go ahead, Eric.
I'm just going to say quickly, the every other week reference, that was done by this particular panel. That's unique to this panel. I mean, if a new group is, you know, seated whenever it is, a week or 2 weeks from now, they shouldn't be bound by what this panel voted on. So, I mean, if they decide they want to go every week, that's their prerogative.
You're saying when the next group starts?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying this particular panel voted. I'm explaining what Medina says. I mean, they're not bound by what we voted to do.
Exactly. You know, that is true. Jim?
All right. Well, first of all, how much more time do we have, Catherine, in terms of meetings before the new groups come in? What dates are we talking about?
I believe we're talking about March. I don't know the date. I haven't kept up with the actual schedule of the elections, and then when the boards actually meet, and then when they vote to bring someone else in. I don't really know, but right. I believe it will be in March.
All right. I respect Benito's comments about this. You know, I've been in the hospital for the past couple of weeks, Benito. I nearly lost my foot. So I sure as hell don't like to come on these meetings if I have to, okay? I still haven't gotten through this yet. However, it wasn't my decision to not have meetings for 6 to 7 months. It was someone else's decision. I had to take the initiative with Catherine to get this back in motion. So imagine if we had been able to go through this process where they basically said you got to take everything that you've been arguing about for like 6 months and you got to come back at it with us again. Well, maybe we would have been more motivated to get that done in September rather than in February when I nearly lost my foot. So, but I respect that. And I respect the fact that, you know, people have time. One of the proposals I had in there was for us to do to propose to the national board to do a special all-day show on the wall, you know, and do it better than anybody else. In other words, go into local communities along the border, have community radio stations down in Arizona, California, Texas, New Mexico, participate. But due to the fact that somebody decided not to have meetings for 7 months, we had to play catch up. And so, and tonight, of course, I've got to go back and, you know, decide whether I want to rewrite everything in the past month, which I don't think I'm going to do, frankly. So, you know, I hear you. It wasn't a great situation. I have my own opinions, as you heard, about what goes on for PNB, but that's that. But that's what we're stuck with. And, of course, we can modify this, you know, to have maybe less meetings. But I don't want to sort of feel that, like, one has put a lot of work. Because, you know, I'm a pretty determined type of guy. I'm going to keep on pushing on the things I have argued for, period. And ain't going to give up because this is, to me, one of the main problems of the whole system for the past 25 years. We haven't been able to figure out a way to catch enough people to listen to us to start with. So, you know, I'm all in favor. We could have, you know, one meeting, two meetings, whatever. But I also want to see Trump toppled. That should be everyone's focus. And, yes, I would like to figure out the best way we can in this committee add our opinions and ideas to get that done. But I thought I was arguing these different resolutions to increase efficiency and effectiveness. But, you know, anyway, so we'll just have to go back and visit that.
All right, Jim. Thanks. Madam Chair, did you want to call it at 5 minutes of the hour?
5 minutes to the hour. Well, we have a meeting scheduled for next week. Is it a consensus to make it 2 weeks instead of next week?
I'm going to, this is Eric, Catherine, if I could speak.
Yes.
I mean, unless they need to have some kind of procedural or legal concern, you know, we scheduled this meeting. I think we should go ahead and have it.
Okay. Yes, Benita.
My point from the beginning was to ask the question, who set these dates? Because it was not agreed upon by the committee. And I think the point that Ken and I both are trying to make is if the group, if the committee agreed months ago to every other week, then let's stick to it.
Okay, duly noted. But yeah, duly noted. But can we go ahead and have this meeting next week, Benito?
Excuse me, Madam Chair. May I finish?
I'm not Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, may I finish?
Yeah, 1 minute, please, Benito. We're out of time.
Thank you. And so the point is, 3 weeks in a row is simply too much. We have other things to do. Not that this ain't important, but the other stuff we got to do is equally, if not more, important. So if we had a meeting, concretely, if we had a meeting today, then I would propose that I would support Catherine's proposal a few minutes ago. Then what about the, if not this coming Tuesday, the one after that? I don't know what the number date would would be, but whatever it is.
I was asking the question. I'm not, as a chair, I'm not putting forth a motion. We don't really have a lot of time, Benito, for that.
Can I make a motion, Madam Chair? Can I make a motion that we... Can I make a motion? I move that we have the motion that we meet next week and revisit the issue as described by Benito. But I move that we have the meeting next week and then revisit the frequency.
Leave it as it is. Okay.
Yes.
All right, so we have a motion. Are there any objections to that motion?
Yeah, Benito.
Okay. So I shall call the roll on it, that of meeting next week. Grace?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Okay. Benito?
No.
Okay. Jim?
Yes.
Steve? Eric?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm calling upon myself. I'm going to abstain. So the motion carries with 1, 2, 3, 4 yeses, 1 abstention, and 1 no. So we will meet next week, and that will be an opportunity to have the discussion again. All right, so I'm going to adjourn this meeting. Thank you, everyone, for participating and contributing. It was very, very useful. Thank you.
Thank you,
everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, good night.
Catherine, good night.
Good night. Yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
Well, I could definitely, you know, schedule, because when do we essentially go out of business?
I don't know. My sense was that last week was might very well have be the last meeting.
Right.
Whatever the next meeting is, it may very well be the last meeting.
Okay. Then
is
then
what I was thinking, because I don't recall anything being scheduled beyond January, but beyond February.
That's right. I haven't scheduled anything. And when essentially are the new boards seated? I mean, essentially, does it go in limbo after March 5th?
As soon as the election is completed, the LSBs will vote on whom they want to participate, I presume, at their first meetings. All of that should take place in March. So...
When are the election results known? When are the election results known?
Early March. I don't know the exact dates, but it's early March,
all right.
I believe.
All right. So basically, we should just simply make this coming meeting the last meeting and be done with it, right?
It could easily be, unless we decide to do something else if the situation has changed. But I don't believe anything else is scheduled at this point. So,
I could schedule something 2 weeks into it, but, you know, I don't have to. It's useful to hear Matthew talk, frankly.
Well, it's a good question, but we've just adjourned the meeting, so I don't want to necessarily schedule something.
All right,
if,
no problem.
If we want to schedule it next week, we can schedule it 2 weeks from next week.
All right.
There'll be plenty of time for that. And then, and just, you know, to say that I apologize for my presentation on your motions. I simply wanted to try to put it in a form that would make it digestible. So I think that we can do that. Yeah.
No, don't worry. You know me. I'm not going to give up on anything. Anyway.
Well, and there's no need to. The motions have passed, so they're they've been put before the board. I just wanted to try to do something that would facilitate an easier passage.
Yeah. The interesting thing is, to bring in outside experts. And I was trying, and I still, let's say, I don't know what the outcome of this board election is going to be. I think it's going to be tougher than these people think. I think it's going to be, yeah, they could win. I don't think it's out of the possibility.
We're probably still on the stream, so we shouldn't be discussing the elections. But
right.
So I just wanted to say that we can
all right,
know,
let me call
our
you.
Best.
Kathy,
okay.
Send me your phone number.
Okay. All right, bye-bye.